Welcome back to this week's Off the Bench podcast from the Premier League. I'm Pras.
And I'm Az.
Game Week 26 is over and we're now treated with a week of FA Cup games that will have a major impact on our planning ahead of Game Week 29. Remember, there could be as few as three fixtures with just West Ham, Aston Villa, Burnley, Brentford and Fulham, Tottenham currently guaranteed to go ahead.
Yeah, but that's ages away, Pras. We haven't got to worry about that until Thursday. Game week 26, how did you get on?
I had an okay week. Actually, I've got a red arrow after a very long time. So not a brag, but yeah, this was one of those weeks where you go through your transfers. You think, who can I replace Jota with? Can it be Douglas Luiz? Will it be Bowen? Or will it be Huang? And obviously, you pick the guy who blanks and the other two just go absolutely mental. How was yours?
Well, red arrow. First red arrow in a while. Actually, so can't really complain too much. It's one of those weeks though where, like, obviously we're looking ahead to game week 29, thinking about the blank game week and the fixtures, and I thought, you know what, I'm not going to worry about that. I'm going to focus on the short-term fixtures. The Wolves have got a great fixture. I'm going to bring in players from them, and yeah, we're going to talk about them in a bit. But I think unless you bought in 8 Nori or Sarabia, then I think you're probably cursing your luck in that match.
It's one of those things, yeah, like you said, where sometimes we, you know, in hindsight, we say, maybe I shouldn't have overplanned. I should have taken what's in front of me. This is a good example where it doesn't always work, actually. You know, it is about just picking good players over a longer run. And you can still argue that somebody like a Huang or Neto is a good pick in the long run. But yeah, this week was brutal for those 50-50s.
Well, you mentioned the games that are guaranteed to go ahead, you know, in game week 29. And if you went for Douglas Luiz, if you went for Bowen, if you went for Bailey, if you got those players in early, not only have you got that player in play for 29, but you also got the immediate returns from them. So I think if you did, you know, strategize and go for that, then you're rewarded. And people like us who only fought the short term, you know, maybe didn't get so lucky. But football-wise, really interesting week. Loads of goals being scored. Not many from players that we own, but that's fine. Let's take a look at some of the fixtures that were played out. So Villa Forest was a high scoring game. As well, yep. We've already mentioned Douglas Luiz coming in with that. Bailey too. Watkins as well, for anyone that kind of sold him and bought him back. They were kind of immediately returned. I mean, Villa just scoring goals for fun at the moment, aren't they?
They are. And, you know, there were some concerns that, you know, Kamara is injured, you know, Pau Torres, could only play the first half. They've got Diego Carlos out. They've got Konsa out. And people were like, you know, will they cope defensively and offensively? And there were also concerns on where Douglas Luiz was playing. So I think they've managed it well in the couple of games that we've seen them without Kamara. You know, McGinn and Douglas Luiz have this pivot going and their home form has been impeccable, right? So Douglas Luiz has scored pretty much all his goals. So 9 goals in 25 league games. All of them have come at Villa Park. He's got 25 bonus. He's a good pick, but it's just one of those things where when we don't see the player in the penalty area as much, we think, do I really want to get the guy who's just on pens and not getting those shots? That was my thinking anyway, looking at Douglas Luiz.
He also blanks a lot, doesn't he? Like, yeah. I know we don't expect players to return kind of every week, but you look at Douglas Luiz's points and he can go for a whole run of like twos and zeros. And that's where he gets this kind of reputation for, you know, being quite reliant on the penalties. I mean, you know, a penalty taker for Villa is always going to be a good pick, you know, because they're going to win penalties. They're going to score loads of goals. He has got open play threat as well. If you look at his XGI over kind of the last week, you know, 0.6, 0.8, 0.5. These are good numbers of underlying stats. So it's not like he's a defensive line midfielder who's barely getting forward. He is getting into good positions. It's just those twos and those threes. You've got to put up with those. But every now and then he comes in with a 10 and a 15. I mean, what do you prefer? Do you prefer like a Neto, like a steady stream of like fives and sixes? Or do you like the occasional like explosive return?
I mean, ultimately, unless you're captaining them, it shouldn't matter. So that's the right answer. But, you know, we watch football, right? So we want our players, we want to root for our players. And this is where, you know, somebody like a Bailey comes in. It's same team. You know, basically, he had 3 shots in the box, 10 pen touches. He's actually 12th amongst all players for expected assists, which is actually big because Bailey doesn't play every game. He doesn't play 90 minutes every game. So it's a very different player to a Douglas Luiz who is going to play consistently beyond penalties. Ultimately, you know, it really comes down to if you think there is enough open play threat, you can't just rely on set pieces, then, you know, Luiz just wins out. But watching Bailey was so fun. I mean, he was so good on that right-hand side.
Yeah, and I mean, Bailey's only played 90 minutes twice all season, which is something that's put me off him a little bit. Obviously, with the new kind of rules and the amount of added time we get, you don't want your players getting subbed off before those 90 minutes. And you tend to get 90 minutes with Douglas Luiz. So I've always kind of had him a little bit ahead on a pecking order. But the role Bailey's now got in this side, he's becoming more and more important to that attack. And when you watch him, like you say, you watch him and you think, wow, this guy is getting forward, driving forward at every opportunity to try and make things happen. So, yeah, I think he's a great pick going forward, and especially as we keep saying with that guaranteed game in 29.
And of course, we have to talk about Watkins, another double return for him. He's now up to 14 goals and 15 assists. No other player has been involved in more Premier League goals this season. So absolutely incredible season. And just in terms of FPL returns, he's now 29 total returns. And the next best is Haaland and Salah, both at 24. So incredible season for him. And, you know, when you add the fact that he's not on penalties, he's just such a good FPL player.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at he's averaging kind of 6.5 points a game, which is absolutely massive. And if he carries that on to the end of the season, he's going to be on 240 points, you know, around 240, 250 points, which, you know, that's like Salah, Haaland, De Bruyne, you know, they're like elite numbers, you know, playing for the top sides. Absolutely incredible season for him. And he's not really a player that I've captained him once when I got the 18 points against Sheffield United. That was a good week. But I haven't really been considering him very often other than that. Have you put the armband on Watkins at all?
The one when he actually blanked, yes.
That was Sheffield United as well, wasn't it? I did that one too. Yeah, that's right.
Sheffield United has eaten up a lot of captain blanks this season. But look, I think another factor to consider for Villa and for Watkins, and we're now going a little bit in the future, but they have had, you know, very nice runs of fixtures where you can just get their players double ups or even just Watkins and cap him. But then end of the season, we'll have to be thinking again on, do we have to go for Watkins? It's going to be a very interesting time because they have to play Liverpool, City, Arsenal, Chelsea, Brighton, West Ham away. So these are, you know, all little bit tricky, and you think that if you're going to go into the run-in with a Villa player, it has to be Watkins, but he's getting pricier. So while an amazing pick so far, I think there will be a crossroads where people will decide, do I need to get this player or have to finish the season with him or not?
Yeah, and a lot of us are going to be wildcarding in and around game week kind of 31. We know then they have, like you say, Man City, Arsenal, they've got kind of Chelsea coming up too. So I don't know, I think Watkins, I can't see myself losing Watkins going forward, but maybe going with a double, the triple up on the attack might be a bit much.
Indeed, and look, I am a double Villa defense owner, and it's not good because I've got Konsa, who's been injured for a while, and then Pau Torres. Well, it looks like it's minor, but you know, it just so happened that they had Sheffield United twice, and I wanted their defenders. None of them kept clean sheets, but again, I think defensively they're not as good as they were, and especially away from home. So again, one that you could avoid, but also carry if you're looking to play that team in game week 29.
Two clean sheets in 10 for Villa. And I know that because I'm a Martinez owner, a long-suffering Martinez owner.
I'm sure you got the Sheffield United clean sheet.
I did.
I had Konsa who basically limped off on the 59th minute, but we won't talk about that.
Oh, dear. Yeah, just about. I think they scored in like the 89th minute or something. Sheffield United, but it was ruled out for offside. So
correct.
Take that. Let's come to Man United, Fulham. Then your team, a home loss against Fulham. I mean, I don't think many of us saw that coming until we heard of the Hoyland news. And then it was kind of a bit like, oh, how are Man U going to play without the kind of man in form? Four successive wins going into that game as well. And Fulham without Paulinho, a two. I did think Man U were going to win that game fairly comfortably. What did you make of it?
Honestly, as soon as the Hoyland injury news came out, all the Man United fans knew the writing was on the wall, because it's not the goals. It's not the goals that Hoyland had produced. It was basically the hold-up play, the fact that how he brings into the game, you know, the runners from Rashford and Garnacho, who was in terrific form. It's just the whole unit doesn't function if it's Rashford up top. And then we obviously tried, the Forson experiment. So we didn't want to change too much and play Antony instead. But look, it did not work. And I would say the game against Nottingham Forest, the FA Cup game this week, is going to be crucial because as you may know, that, that will determine whether Man United's game with Sheffield United will go ahead in 29 or Luton's game will go ahead in game week 29, which are both crucial teams to look at. So the FA Cup game is going to be critical, but I think from an FPL point of view, unless they have this game against Sheffield United in game week 29, they're a definite avoid. without Hoylett.
I mean, I can see Forest beating Man U in the cup. I don't think that's completely, you know, out of the realms of possibility. I mean, I've got Garnacho, who I've had for quite a while, and I've benched him once, which was for, of course, the 16-pointer against West Ham, which is absolutely typical. And you know, I was looking at him this game, and I was thinking, you know, he's going to be playing on the left. He's going to be back in his favourite position. You know, maybe he can get something, but like you say, it just didn't really click. And I think this week, when you were maybe having some blanking players in your team, people were looking at, I saw three people buying Fernandes, for example, looking at Rashford, looking at players who, this is not necessarily have been doing amazingly well for us this season, but offered something a bit different. And it's one of those seasons where a lot of the time when you try and do something a little bit different, you end up getting punished. So yeah, it was an interesting game. I mean, there's not really anyone from Fulham we're considering. I know they've got the game in 29. Is there anyone from Fulham that you're looking at?
Well, I would say one to monitor is Muniz. He's basically started his fourth match in a row. Obviously, while Jimenez has been injured, he's playing up top really cheap. And if it's something that you want to look at, even in this game, he had 5 shots in the box, which was the highest amongst all players. Just one to monitor, because as you're looking to maybe, you know, dead end your team towards a wild card in Game Week 29, you could look for a cheap forward. Although money is not a problem, that would be the only one I would say I'd think about.
I mean, you heard it here first. You're about the only person I've heard recommending a 4.4 million striker playing for Fulham. He's done all right, though. I mean, between Game Weeks 23 and 25, 8, 13, 8.
Yeah.
And then, like you say, good stats in the game against Manchester United. Oh, I love that. Love that, Praz. Hopefully someone listening to this will have the guts to go for Muniz. Let's come over to the Bournemouth-Man City. I think this one was a disappointing game as well, wasn't it? A lot of us are loaded up on Man City because obviously they had the double and then came into this game as well. They absolutely thrashed Bournemouth earlier in the season. Two, obviously Haaland's back. You know, De Bruyne was kind of 50-50, but you know, we kind of thought maybe he'd get a start. But in the end, it was another return for Foden. A clean sheet for Man City, which they found a little bit hard to come by. But I don't know, lots of blanks for lots of popular players.
I mean, Man City in general, over the last 3 weeks, when a lot of us have gone for their assets, have not shown the goals and the number of FPL points that they're able to. I mean, Haaland, for example, is going through this patch. If you take a 6-week sample and you look at XG underachievement, which is basically the number of goals he's scoring versus the XG that he's creating, which in very simplistic terms is how is his finishing, right? Is he actually finishing really well or not? This is actually the worst patch that he's had in his career in a 6-game week period. So since he's come back from injury, and Pep also mentioned this, that, you know, he is missing some big chances. He's not showing the things that strikers do when they're in form, which is fine. I mean, it's not a concern. It doesn't mean we sell Haaland, but it's something to monitor that, it's not the same high productive machine that we've been used to before his injury and even last season. It's just a case of he's going to get chances. And at the moment, given that he's not going through this purple patch, he's not going to get you the hat-tricks of the world. But somebody who is doing really, really well this season is Phil Foden, who's now got more FPL points and more Premier League minutes than any other season so far. And you love Phil Foden, I remember, from times going back, right?
I do love Phil Foden. I mean, I owned him last year, you know, for the first kind of part of the season when he was doing really well. And then I think something happened and he got benched in one game, and we kind of all thought, oh, that was a bit odd. He's been playing really well. And then it just kept happening, and he just couldn't seem to get back into the team, get the rhythm. You know, they went on and won the treble, but he went from being a kind of star player, one of the star players at the beginning, to being a bit of a bit part player towards the end. And I've got to admit, at that point, I was like, well, where does Foden kind of go from here? Like, is he going to be able to ever break into this team? And I think with Mahrez leaving and Gundogan as well, they were kind of two positions where he could feature, you know, in the middle or on the right. And he just really has cemented down that spot kind of on the right now, but he has the versatility to play kind of anywhere else. And I do love him. I've always thought he's brilliant, but he has gone up 10 levels, you know, this season. The way he gets the ball from like almost his own penalty area and just drives it forwards. I've not seen a player do that impressively, I don't think, in the league. And he's trusted more in those kind of tight spaces in the midfield. He's not losing the ball, and the ball looks stuck to his feet at times. So he's the most vital cog, I think, in that Pep City team. And it's, yeah, amazing credit to him. And really looking forward to seeing him for England as well, because I'm hoping the same thing can happen. And with that, I don't see how Southgate can leave him out. So, yeah, he's an absolutely amazing asset. I mean, he's another player who, do we need to start thinking about captaining, like, potentially? Because you mentioned Haaland. You mentioned, you know, we're not going to sell Haaland. But if things kind of carry on as they are, maybe we will start looking elsewhere for that captaincy. Maybe Foden could be one of the benefits.
Yeah, I hear you. And every time we do talk about Foden, we think about England, which is obviously we digress, but it's just so, so exciting. You know, the front line that England's looking at, and we'll talk about Saka and Bellingham. Obviously, we don't see day in, day out, but he's doing so well as well. But we will not digress further. I think the guy who has been playing every single game so far, 24 matches, this was the first game that he did not start, was Julian Alvarez. And it was surprising because KDB didn't start either. Were you surprised at that? That, you know, Foden obviously took the central role, but both Alvarez and De Bruyne didn't start this one.
I was surprised because of the amount of games that he's been playing, but not too surprised based on performances and the like. I mean, obviously we look at everything through a kind of FPL lens, and that's not always the best way when you're trying to think about tactics and football and things like that. But from an FPL perspective, I think Alvarez has been pretty disappointing for owners. I mean, you know, you've got a 6.5, 7-ish million striker playing every game for Man City. And he had quite a good period at the start of the season, but the goals and assists have been a little bit more hard to come by kind of over recent weeks. So, you know, when you look at that purely from FPL, you can say, okay, for our own teams, it's probably not, you know, he's probably not one to consider. But I think that's the role that he needs to have for Man City. He needs to be creating goals. He needs to be scoring chances on his own.
Yeah.
And when that isn't happening, you're always at risk of being kind of subbed out, especially when there's so many other options that can come into the side. I think, like you say, I think the biggest thing with that was when you saw the team without Alvarez, without KDB, you think, okay, where is the creativity going to come from? You know, it's going to be very reliant on Foden on the right to kind of make things happen. And I think that is where, you know, you need someone like that to maybe come in and change things. And I think it affects Haaland as well, because it's at a time when he's still getting kind of decent chances and you know, and snatching at them, but he needs more chances because he's not finishing the ones that he currently gets, which I didn't think I'd be saying this season.
Agreed. And owners very unlucky with De Bruyne. I mean, look, he was a decent pick. I think, you know, we all knew about the injury concerns. He was coming back after a long layoff, but he was back to a large extent. And I think midweek of last week, which was the second game of the double, there were some niggles, and obviously he missed out on that game. And then this game, clearly he wasn't ready when he came on. He had that big chance in the end.
Oh, I know. Looked very slow, didn't he?
Looked so slow, and he almost missed the ball. And, you know, that was a goal. I mean, I was, as a non-owner, I was watching that and I was like, here we go. you know, I thought I got away with it, but comes away with a yellow card. And look, I think on the balance, I feel lucky that I got away with De Bruyne only scoring 2 points over the last three matches. And that's possibly because of the niggle, possibly because he was a minute's risk anyway. But any City player should score more than 2 points in three games.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I sold KDB going into this week because, you know, I was so disappointed by that double game week, you know, like you say, 2 points across that. And I just hate having kind of, I know he's always been a little bit of a rotation, but I always felt that, you know, he's going to get a kind of a substantial part of the game, even when he comes off the bench. When I saw City against Brentford and I saw they were struggling to break them down, and it got to 60, 65 minutes, KDB wasn't even warming up or looking like he was, you know, going to play. And I just thought, okay, there's something not right here. Because if he was even remotely ready, he would be, you know, stripped and coming on, you know, coming on the pitch. And I was really surprised that he was even on the bench for that game if they weren't going to use him. And in the end, they kind of got the win. But yeah, there's clearly something not quite right with him. So I sold him for Wang, who I thought, you know, the striker playing against Sheffield United, surely that's going to pay off. De Bruyne benched, he comes off the bench, he gets booked. And I'm thinking, oh, all Wang needs to do is get 4 points now and I'm going to have this hit paid off. And he gets three. Typical, isn't it?
classic. I mean, it's a big period, actually. Just, again, looking at big picture for Man City, you know, over the next 5 weeks, they've got Man United, Liverpool, Brighton, Arsenal and Villa. Obviously, the Brighton one, we don't know if it happens. But this is big, both from the Premier League perspective as well as, you know, our perspective of holding some of these players. And I would think in the future, I'm open to losing all, including Haaland, for a little bit. Mm. At least that's the strategy at the moment. And then wildcarding and getting them all back. But this is all future planning. It'll depend on what happens this midweek. But just something to keep in mind that, you know, I would think Man United at home this week, very good fixture. Again, for all the things we said about Man United. But after that, when you have Liverpool, possible blank, Arsenal, then people can look to basically maneuver the blank and maybe will sell out of their Man City assets.
Exactly. And you know, there's not too many times in a season where you can even really consider selling Haaland. Obviously, you could when he had the injury. And actually, selfishly, I kind of quite enjoyed that time because I was able to captain different players and we had money in the bank to use on bringing in different assets and things. But I mean, from game week 31, I mean, the fixtures just look amazing. I mean, right from 31 right down to 38, you know, the toughest fixture there is Spurs away in 34, probably. But even that game, you'd still think they're probably going to score a few in that. So we're going to be loading back up on City, I think, on, you know, when wild cards are played or if we're making transfers from 31. So yeah, maybe now is the time to sell a couple. And you're probably not going to, although I don't think I'd do it this week ahead of Man
not,
at home.
Not this week. By the way, I have scars from last season because that was game week 9 where Haaland scored the hat-trick and 2 assists against Man United. Yeah.
Foden did well, didn't he, as well?
He scored a hat-trick as well.
Yeah,
I
didn't
score a hat-trick.
Yeah. Yep.
And I didn't have either. Well, I had Haaland and I didn't captain him and I didn't have Foden. And that was a terrible week and I couldn't recover from that last season, like for a long time. So I'm definitely going to be captaining Haaland. Just a little bit of a... how you have to play. I can't do it again.
Oh, against your own team as well. It's never nice. I do exactly the same. You know, once bitten, twice shy, isn't it? That's the thing with that. I mean, we haven't really mentioned Bournemouth. I mean, it was a decent defensive performance from them. They've been conceding quite a few goals lately, and I think a lot of us thought they were going to concede a few more in this one. They've got the double in 28. They've got a good game against Burnley coming up as well. Obviously, Solanke is the one that we're all kind of looking at. I bought him in this week, got a blank from that. So yeah, my two transfers weren't exactly amazing for this week, but hopefully in the kind of mid to longer term, they'll be a bit better. I mean, is there anyone else from Bournemouth that you're looking at kind of in defence or maybe in midfield?
Well, I would say there's nobody who's completely nailed. You know, they switch around their midfielders a lot, especially the wide forwards. So, you know, you could look at a Tavernier, Sinisterra, but they're not nailed for minutes, but... If you want to take a fixtures punt, because like you said, it doesn't get better than Burnley, Sheffield United and Luton as the next three, right? So if you wanted to go there, that's possible. You know, Senesi is always an option that people talk about, but, you know, a caveat that he's now on 8 yellow cards. So if he gets one next week and he gets another one, he'll miss the second game of the double. So because you get a 2-match suspension if you get 10 yellow cards. So that's one to think about. And then Neto, I think if people are tired and bored of their goalkeepers, which a lot of people are, then Neto is a good one because not only do you get the benefit of the double in game week 29, you can basically play your Areolas or somebody else who have a game. And even if Bournemouth don't, that's not a problem. So that's, I mean, Neto is somebody who I'm thinking about as well.
Yeah. And the good thing about Neto is in game week 30, when you're coming off the blank, he goes into Everton at home. So Bournemouth are a nice team to invest in, particularly if you're thinking about considering the free hit chip in 29. You can, you know, get in 3 Bournemouth, take a bit of a punt on it, and then go into 30. No, they've got a decent home game as well. I mean, the midfielders, like you mentioned, are pretty disappointing. I mean, Tavernier is probably the one that you'd go for. He looks to be playing the most minutes and has been doing okay. He's got 71 points for the season. I mean, Sinisterra is the one that I want to get because I have good memories of him from last season when he was at Leeds, but he's just not getting the minutes. So I just don't think there's really anyone. From that, I think like you say, you go for Neto. You wait to see what happens to Senesi this week. Hopefully he doesn't get the if he gets one booking, I think that probably rules him out of the double, doesn't it? Because you're not going to risk it that he gets another one. So maybe you go for one of the other defenders. But to be fair, I'm probably just going to go with 2 Bournemouth. Probably Neto and Solanke. Is that what you're thinking as well?
That would be the case. But again, everything is dependent on free hit 29 or not, which we will know in a couple of days.
Yeah. What's your early thoughts on that? Because I was looking at my team and I can't see any way that I'm going to avoid the free hit in 29. I've got like 3 players. Unless the FA fixtures, you know, there's a lot of upsets. I'm in big trouble that week.
I've got five players, and obviously there's three free transfers. So it would depend on Luton having a game or not, because then I could get a couple of Luton, even if it's for a hit. They have a double in 28, they would play in 29. That would really determine if I free hit that week or not. So it is that crucial game, which is Man United Forest, which will determine a lot of free hits versus not free hits, but some may do it anyway. And I don't think there's a clear week. It's very, very team dependent. And I think it's fine to play it in game week 29, to be honest. Speaking of teams to target, we should talk about Arsenal.
We should. I mean, it's another impressive win for them against, a poor Newcastle side. I was disappointed when I saw the performance from them. I thought Arsenal would win this, but I thought Newcastle would give them a bit more of a fight. And if it wasn't for a kind of a late consolation goal, you'd be looking at a big 4-0 win. 25 goals in their last six matches. I mean, that's three more than Sheffield United, who they're playing in Game Week 27, have managed all season. I mean, that is an incredible stat. And I've stolen that because you wrote that down in the document. But that is an amazing stat, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible how that break, whatever they've done in Dubai, has done them wonders, right? I mean, we talk about the need for a break for the players and a reset, a winter break, and you can see the benefits from a team like Arsenal. This will benefit them in the Champions League. It will benefit them in the league. It might benefit England later on. So it's fantastic to see. I mean, it's already a team that were doing well from last season that had a good start, but you can just see that rejuvenated spirit. And defensively, they've been absolutely excellent as well. I mean, I've been on Gabriel and Saliba for about 10 weeks now. Not always successful because I've benched the couple of goals that Saliba scored. But I think overall, it just doesn't give me any headache because I know I'm not selling these two guys for a while until you know, maybe there's a fixtures change or some doubles or something that changes my mind. I think these two are just so reliable, Saliba and Gabriel.
Yeah.
Gabriel was, again, really close to that goal until Livramento did this deflection to Botman. That own goal. But yeah, otherwise, really, really good team. You know, very nice FPL picks as well because Saka's a good price. Even now, he's a good price because ideally, he's on pens. He's scoring goals for a team that is, you know, top three in terms of attacking output. He could be 11, 12 million and people wouldn't sort of say he's expensive.
Yeah, I mean, last time I was on the pod, we were debating whether it was time to sell him. Just before the run that he'd had, I think it must have been game week 21. I think he just blanked against Crystal Palace. He'd only had two double-digit returns all season. One of those was in game week one against Forest. The other one was in game week six against Spurs. It was a lot of blanks as well. And it was, you know, we were thinking, okay, he is quite a bit of money now. 5-0 against Crystal Palace and he's blanked. Maybe it's time to part ways. I mean, since then, you know, four double-digit hauls and a nine-pointer. I mean, I know of people that sold him. The underlying stats remained good. That was the kind of the thing for me. You can see, if a player's not returning and their stats are poor, that's where, you know, looking at the numbers can really help. And they weren't. He was putting in some good stats still. But I mean, I wasn't expecting the transformation in the way it was. And like you say, I mean, I'm a Brighton fan and we had some kind of warm weather training as well. And I was thinking the same thing as Arsenal. I was thinking this could be a real, you know, kickstart, you know, get our season back on track. We've been bang average since that. So I don't know what Arsenal did differently to us, but clearly, something's worked. I mean, the amazing thing about Arsenal has to be the set piece threat they've got now. I mean, more goals scored from set pieces than any other team. And they weren't really a team that I'd looked at in terms of those set pieces. I know Gabriel's always had threat, but they weren't always using that to their advantage. They were playing corners quite short, not always looking to get the ball in. I don't know what the set piece coach has been doing, but every set piece they get, they look like they're going to score.
It's terrific. I mean, and actually, a subtle change they've made is Declan Rice has started taking the corners of the left, and he's really good at swinging them in. Saka's always been good on the other side, and you've just got two really good guys who want to put their head on the ball. I mean, it's just as simple as that. And now teams know of it, but it's just very difficult to defend against it. I mean, I think it will normalize with anything like this. You know, you talk about Saka's numbers as well. Sometimes we, you know, they overperform and we overpraise, and then when they actually don't do as well, then we undersell them. So I think they will be a normalization. Scoring 8 set piece goals in the last 25 goals is very, very high. It's not going to continue, but it just shows that when you have a season where not a lot of teams are keeping clean sheets, you want defenders that have attacking threat. You know, Saliba and Gabriel are as good as it gets. Even I would say, look, Kivior is not nailed, but he got the goal this time. Ben White is amongst the assists as well. So it's just a good team to have defenders from, and the set piece takers. And Saka's taking corners, he's taking penalties, just good picks.
And that is the complete opposite of their opponents in last week's game, Newcastle. I mean, defensively, I mean, this was a team who, you know, for the last, what, season and a half have been right at the top of all the underlying data for defence. They've a team we really kind of relied on. When we saw Botman at the start of the season, we were thinking 4.5 million for Botman, that's an absolute steal. We've had Dubravka come in because of Pope's injury. We thought he was going to go on and be one of the top scoring goalkeepers. But they've conceded more goals, both expected and actual goals, from 15 onwards than any other team in the league. I mean, what has happened there?
It's something that I don't know. Books will be written on what is the cause of this drop off? Because like you said, it's a team I backed very heavily from the beginning of the season, double up, triple up in defense, because it was just a very good, well-oiled machine in terms of how it's operating its defensive shape. They kept out, you know, they did well against PSG, Milan. You know, they were a good team. But something's gone wrong, whether it's Joe Linton being missing, it's Pope being missing, or just, the confidence going away. But, you know, to be on, even on an expected basis, worse than Burnley and Luton over a 10-game sample, that's really, really worrying. And I've been a Trippier owner for now 4 weeks. I was lucky to get, the goal and a couple of assists, but you can't just rely on attacking returns for your defenders. There has to be a point where you need to get the bread and butter clean sheets, and that's just, it's just not coming.
No, and you look at Trippier and think, okay, that's a zero pointer from him. He's been doing all right lately. I've been late to the party because I didn't have him when he was scoring, 10, 15 pointers every week. I only got him a few weeks ago. But, he's done all right for me. But like you say, every week I'm thinking, well, Newcastle are going to concede in this game. And he's a lot of money to be holding on to. The fixtures aren't great as well. So, yeah, I think he's going to be someone who's going to be transferred out of my team.
Soon. Yeah, I'm just waiting for their game against Blackburn. If there's an off chance they play that, then maybe I'll hold him for game week 29. That's my plan anyway. But this week, are you tempted to play him? I mean, I think I'll play him against Wolves, even though I think, again, as you said, Newcastle will concede. But, there could be an attacking return.
Yeah, I've got other problems to sort out. So he's not someone who I'd be picking or advising people to buy, but he's someone that I'm probably just going to hold. You just never really know when you're going to get something from him, do you? You know, the fact he's on set pieces, the fact he's on free kicks too, it's okay. I mean, it's Chelsea in 28 as well. I think he could maybe get something there too. But yeah, like you said, purely attacking wise, I think if I had like a Burn or a Botman or even Dubravka, now he missed out in the last game. I think they're becoming priority sales. Agreed. Trippier is sell if you can, but you can probably hold him for a few more weeks.
Agreed. Let's talk about your team then. Good performance against Sheffield United. you lured us into the Wolves players because of the excellent performance against Sheffield United, and then now a little bit underwhelming against Everton. So how did that go?
Yeah, I mean, it's only two wins in seven for us now. One of those a big win against Sheffield United, but they did play the majority of that game with 10 men. Obviously, we had the big win against Palace as well in game week 23. We're a really funny side at the moment. I mean, we kind of have been all season. You never really kind of know what you're going to get. We're going to dominate the ball. We're going to create chances. But we went through a period where I thought we'd actually start converting those chances. And now we've gone back to like the Brighton of old. We're creating lots of things, but we just don't really have the players that can finish them. Ferguson's been out of form. Obviously, we've got Welbeck that's come back in. João Pedro being out is a big miss for us. So, I mean, defensively as well, we're just not keeping the clean sheets. I know we did against Sheffield United, but again, I think that was a bit of an anomaly and a bit of a false dawn, because after 20 and 21, we had two clean sheets in a row, but it hasn't really happened. So defensively, I wouldn't really be going near us. Midfield, you could maybe look at Adingra or Gross. I mean, Gross has had some brilliant performances and has been putting up some great numbers. But again, I just think with the way the fixtures are going into kind of around game week 30, 31, we've got a tough run. We haven't got a double. We've got a very likely blank in 29.
Yeah,
I don't think it's time to be investing in us.
I mean, I completely agree with all of that. I just wanted to share this gross little nugget that every attacking return that he's had this season has been complemented by at least one bonus point. So that's, it's the definition of a good FPL pick. And actually, when we were talking about Luiz versus Bailey, I think he fits in that mold as well of the Luizes, where you get a good return, because an assist is worth 5 points.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's actually got bonuses even when the team has lost. And in fact, there was one instance in Game Week 12 where he got a bonus without even getting an attack.
Yeah.
So absolutely insane in terms of an FPL pick. But look, I agree with you. I think Brighton, with the tougher fixtures coming up, you know, the European competition involvement, rotation is going to be rife. So maybe an avoid.
Yeah. And there's not really a spell of good fixtures now for us between now and the end of the season. So it feels a bit points chasey to be considering us. I mean, the next two aren't bad, don't get me wrong. I mean, we've got Fulham and Forest. I think Groves could do all right in those. And obviously, if you've got him, you hold him. But, you know, like we say, 28 is going to be a time when we'll probably be looking at a Bournemouth players. You might be needing getting players for 29 as well. Is Groves the best pick for 27 when you've got Arsenal against Sheffield United and, you know, Bournemouth with Burnley and other teams? But yeah, from 28, it's a really tough period. I mean, we play Arsenal, Liverpool, Newcastle, Manchester United, Villa, Chelsea, like all of the teams in the kind of top half,
right,
of the table. So, yeah, I mean, the biggest problem though is Estupiñán. I've still got him. I was really hoping he'd start after I saw, you know, he was off having pasta with De Zerbi at his house. But in the end, it is a classic. But in the end, he doesn't play, and I think he's got to be a priority sell for people because I just don't trust him to start at the moment.
Okay, we have avoided the topic for a while, talking about getting in Hwang and him blanking. I think we need to talk about him. So, had an XGI of 0.06, so pretty much anonymous in the game. Look, I think it was still a good decision. You agree? I mean, it's just outcome we can't control, but it was still good decision to get a striker or a midfielder playing as a striker against Sheffield United at home.
Yeah, of course it was. I mean, any team playing against Sheffield United, we still expected to do well. I mean, if Sheffield United are a funny team, because when they're kind of at home, I think they go for it a bit more and they just get opened up. But when they're away from home, they just sit back. And that it is really tough to play against a team that sits back in the way that they do. And actually, they create problems for Wolves because they hit them on the counter. They had pace with Brewster, no end product from Brewster at all in that match. But he was causing havoc when he got forward. So they had a clear kind of strategy. And Wilder knows what he's doing. He's been around the game long enough to know. So I don't know. I do think Hwang was a good option. And when I saw him go down in the warm-up, yeah, you know, we're lucky to even get 3 points from him because he could easily have come off in that match. Like I said, I think if it was just Sheffield United this week, I'd be saying maybe it was a bit knee-jerky maybe to be considering. But the fact is, it's Newcastle next. We've just talked about their defensive data. And then it's Fulham at home. That's going to be a more open game. So let's just look at this as it's round one, didn't go for us. You know, if you went for Bowen, if you went for Luiz, fine. But I'm still hopeful he's going to get returns coming.
Agreed. I think not much else to talk about the Wolves game. I think Sarabia, very low ownership. So congrats who went there. Ait Nouri, you know, just around 1% ownership. So they did well. And we knew that there would be two or three players that come out of this game from Wolves that will absolutely smash it. And they were two or three. They just happened to be the less popular ones.
Absolutely. It's always the way. That's why we play this game at the end of the day, isn't it?
Indeed. And the guy who did steal the show last night, we have to talk about Jared Bowen. First goal since Christmas, and he gets it in threes.
Yeah, absolutely. First career hat-trick. As well, I saw his post-match interview as well is great. I love the players that come out and do the interviews, and they're so passionate and they talk so well and stuff. He'll be a pundit, I reckon, in the next few years on that show. He was great. I think Antonio was on it the kind of the week before. But yeah, amazing performance, and I didn't see that coming. You know, we knew that Paqueta being back would have an influence on West Ham, but I wasn't expecting it to be that much of an influence on the team. And Moyes at the end said, you know, we were maybe taking a bit of a risk playing him, but the reward of having getting him in the side was worth it because of the run they've been on that you said. So I think when Paqueta's in the team and Bowen's playing up front, he is an absolutely phenomenal asset. And, you know, they've got Burnley at home coming. They've got the game when there's the blank game week as well. So again, I don't think it's too knee-jerky to be considering Bowen going forward. I think he looks a really, really strong option.
Yeah, like you said, I think Paqueta was a big one. And while Moyes hinted that he could be back, I think there were still People weren't sure if he'll be back or not. So people who went Wang instead of Bowen, I don't think you need to be too hard on yourselves. I was one. I was 50-50 on the two. And look, I don't regret it. It's another 20 points.
What's 20 points?
exactly. we should also talk about Brentford. I mean, they're another team that people have been targeting because they had the game in 26. They had the double last weekend. They have a confirmed game in 29 as well, but this game just not to be for Tony and Reguilon, who are the two popular picks from there.
Yeah, I mean, Reguilon was kind of quite antsy kind of the whole game, got booked. He has that kind of temperament in him when things maybe aren't going his way, but he does offer the kind of attacking potential from the Brentford defence that you don't really get from anyone else. I just think at the moment they're a hard avoid. I mean, Mee went off injured, they got Pinnock out. As well, Flecken had a really good spell, but we've seen kind of problems from him kind of from earlier kind of in the season as well. They've got injuries, you know, and Boomer out's been a huge blow for them. I don't know. I just think even Tony's obviously the one that you'd pick, but are you really going to go against the slanky Watkins Haaland kind of triple up, which I think looks so effective going forward? I think Tony was unlucky last night. I think he could have at least had one return, particularly right at the end. He had a good shot. Which was saved. But I think Brentford, given the fixtures are turning, given you know the fact that they're just not really performing very well, I think we're all going to be looking to move their assets on if we got them.
Agreed. I think they've been leaky enough that actually you could even go forward and say you would target them. I mean, yeah. I'm looking forward to playing Palmer against Brentford this weekend, and then you know we've got Arsenal. So yeah, I think it's a team to target as such, which hasn't been the case traditionally, but with the injuries like you mentioned to the centre backs. It's a good one.
I think obviously Sheffield United, we would have kind of predicted that at the start of the season, that might be a team for us to target. But Newcastle and Brentford as well, defensively, I wouldn't have thought they would be kind of in the mix at this point. I thought they would be, you know, I thought Newcastle would be top six again. Brentford would be comfortable mid-table. But yeah, I think, again, Rico Henry being out for Brentford, I think is a massive miss for them. I think that's really kind of destabilised a lot of their play going forward and the, you know, kind of solidity at the back. Yeah, definitely a team to avoid FPL wise, but like you say, to maybe target with captains and transfer picks.
Absolutely. Okay, we've got midweek FA Cup games coming. Any ones you're looking forward to the most, of course, apart from your beloved Brighton?
Yeah, of course, Brighton versus Wolves. That should be a really good game. It's really tough to call that one. I don't know who's going to win. I mean, Forest Man United, I think, has the biggest impact on kind of FPL wise, because like you say, I think if Nottingham Forest can beat Manchester United in that game, which I think is a real possibility, we're going to see a lot of investment in Manchester United players going into that 29, a game against Sheffield United.
Or even a free hit.
Or even a free hit, absolutely, yeah. In fact, it will help me because I'm almost certainly going to have to do that, as I said. Chelsea-Leeds is a really interesting one as well. Leeds are absolutely flying at the moment. Comeback win in the Championship against Leicester just a few days ago. Chelsea obviously a bit dispirited after losing in the final and also having to go right to the wire. They looked knackered at the end of that game. I mean, Gallagher looked like he was walking through treacle towards the end of that match. I think Leeds are going to be really, really up for that game. And obviously, if they get that win, then that's going to create some more options for us in 29.
Yeah, I mean, if Chelsea do end up losing, then all the Chelsea players and Arsenal players, which is the fixture in game week 29, will have a game. And suddenly then game week 29 becomes easy to navigate because we're all filled up with Arsenal.
That might be my get out of jail free card for the free hit if Leeds can beat Chelsea. So yeah, I'll definitely be supporting them when they play tomorrow. Right, Praz, amazing stuff. Best of luck everyone who's listening to this for the next game. It's going to be nice to have a kind of a relatively normal game week for a change with all the blanks and doubles that have been surrounding this week. One bit of advice from us: save those transfers until we know which fixtures are confirmed. In 29, this really isn't the week for early transfers, so do save them if you can. And also, you've got to check out the pod with Kelly, Jules, Sam and Ian. They're back on Thursday and they'll be talking about all things Game Week 27 and beyond.
And if you haven't done so already, join the FPL Pod League. The code is IB3WLK.
See you next time, everyone.
Bye, everyone.